saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Well, good morning. How's everyone doing this morning? Good. Well, man, I'm really excited about this morning, and I hope you are as well. You know, we've been in this Perspectives series, looking at the death and resurrection of Jesus through the vantage point, through the perspective, through the eyes of those who witnessed it firsthand. It's been a really interesting study. It's been really fruitful for me, even as I prepare these messages throughout the week. In many ways, looking at the death and resurrection of Jesus in a way that I've never looked at it before. I'm also really excited about those video devotionals that Cameron mentioned earlier. I had the privilege of sitting down and videoing those videos with a handful of different people this week, a handful of different people from our church. Each contributed something to one of these videos. And it was just really cool to kind of continue this idea along. And so each one of those devotionals is just another look at this monumentous, earth-shattering season and moment in time through the eyes of someone else. And so I'm really excited about it. I hope you're looking forward to it as well. Now, as we get started this morning, I want you to do me a favor, and I need everyone in here to play along. If you're watching online, I need you to play along as well. Unless you're driving, please keep your eyes open. So here's what I want you to do. I need everyone in here just to, for a second, I need you to close your eyes. So just close your eyes, and I want you to imagine the crucifixion of Jesus. So just give yourself a minute to pull up a mental image of the crucifixion. Okay, you can open your eyes now. So I'm curious as to what came to your mind. Maybe it was something like this. Something peaceful, something with the sun setting in the background. And if this was what you imagined, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but this is a fairy tale. This didn't happen. Maybe it was something more like this, imagined in your mind. While a step closer towards reality, if we were going to rate this, this would be a G-rated image. Maybe you thought of something more along the lines of this. If you were to take the time to look through the details, maybe we're taking a step in the right direction, but still, at best, this is a PG version of the crucifixion of Jesus. As a matter of fact, even the movie that I think came out, 15, 16 years ago, The Passion of the Christ, while rated R as a movie, just began to scratch the surface of what actually took place in the moment of the crucifixion of Jesus. So I want you to play along with me once again. And I want everyone to just close their eyes. And I want you to reimagine the crucifixion. But I want you to imagine it in the kind of way that makes your stomach a little sick. I want you to just think about the sounds that you would hear at that place. I want you to think about the smells, knowing that this is the site that they regularly do this same kind of activity. I want you to imagine the crowd that's standing around you. Because what kind of person would show up on a Friday afternoon at a place like this for their pre-weekend entertainment? What kind of person shows up just for their own entertainment to mock and throw trash at the victims of the worst form of torture and execution humans have ever invented? Now you can open your eyes. Do you feel the weight of this moment and this place? Crucifixion was not a place for children, and it wasn't a place for those with a weak stomach. Now, we have children in here today, and so we're just not going to talk in depth detail more about this scene. If this is something that does intrigue you about knowing more about that, in the Bible app, there is a link. And if you aren't in the Bible app right now, you can scan this QR code. And it'll open up our event today in the Bible app with all the links that you need, all the links that go along with the announcements Cameron gave earlier. And in the Bible app, there is a link to a sermon that I gave 2 years ago on the historical realities of crucifixion. We didn't have cameras back then in Element Church, so it's just the audio. But in it, we explore the historical and biblical and realistic accounts of what we know took place at crucifixions. It's graphic, and it's probably not the kind of thing that you want to listen to when you go out just for a nice, easy run this week, or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, because it's not easy, light listening. But if you want more in-depth knowledge of where crucifixion came from, what it was used for, and what actually happened there, you can click that link and download that sermon there. Now, as you start to develop a picture of a realistic understanding and view of crucifixion, as you start to feel the weight of that moment in that place, knowing what kind of sights and sounds and smells you would experience, knowing what kind of crowd you would be surrounded by, about what kind of people come to this event as their form of entertainment. And as you grasp that idea, as you grasp that mental picture, I want you to add to it this: that the man who everyone is turning their attention on, that man who everyone is turning their focus on, that man who everyone is pouring out every ounce of hatred they can muster out up on, that is your son. Because on that day, that was the reality for Mary. Look at John chapter 19. John 19, verse 25. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Witnessing it all, there stood Jesus' mother, Mary. I can't even for a second pretend to be able to understand the pain and the sorrow and the heartache she must have been experiencing in that moment. I don't really think any of us could really fathom. I mean, let alone the fact that none of us can really even fathom what it would be like to be tasked with raising God's Messiah and helping him to grow and develop as a child, and then to see it all come to end in this moment. Now, I want to read a story for you, a portion out of Luke chapter 2, when Jesus was just a very young child or a baby, an event that I can't help but think Mary must have reflected on as she stood at the foot of this cross. And here's the context of what we're about to read in Luke chapter 2. Mary and Joseph have taken Jesus to Jerusalem, into the temple, to have him dedicated to the Lord as was Jewish custom and law to do. So they bring this young child, Jesus, to dedicate him to the Lord at the temple, because that's what Jewish families were supposed to do. And here's what happens when they arrive. Now, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon, and this man was righteous and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. And it had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And he came in the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him, according to the custom of the law, he took him up in his arms and blessed God and said, "Lord, now you are letting your servant depart in peace according to your word. For my eyes have seen your salvation that you have prepared in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel." And his father and his mother marveled at what was said about him. And Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, "Behold, this child is appointed for the fall and rising of many in Israel, and for a sign that is opposed, and a sword will pierce your own soul also, so that thoughts from many hearts will be revealed." Is there any way that Mary could have grasped this prophecy that Simeon was giving in that moment? When he said, "Mary, and a sword is going to pierce your soul too." I mean, as a new mother, you're full of excitement and expectation and hope for the future. How much more for Mary? I mean, God had sent an angel to announce the birth of this baby. God had told her, "This child is the Lord's Christ. You shall name him Emmanuel, God with us. You'll give him the name Jesus, which means Yahweh saves. And he will sit on the throne of David, and there will be no end to his kingdom." The excitement and the hope that must have filled Mary, and the confusion she must have had at this moment. What does he mean? What is God trying to say that even through this boy, a sword will pierce my own soul as well? I wonder if Mary reflected on this moment as she stood at the foot of the cross. In John 19, we return to the story of the crucifixion of Jesus. Since it was the day of preparation, so that's the day before the Sabbath, so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs, that's all those on the being crucified that day, might be broken, that they might be taken away. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who had been crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once there came out blood and water. Mary's soul was pierced, just as was Jesus' side. even through his own pain and suffering, Jesus was focused on others. He was hurting on behalf of others, even in the face and in the midst of his own turmoil and suffering and pain. He offered forgiveness to the soldiers without them even asking for it. Jesus gave hope to a criminal hanging next to him. And then Jesus looked on his own mother in the midst of his own pain and suffering to make sure that she was cared for after he was gone. John 19. We read the first part of this just a few minutes ago. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own home. The pain and suffering of Jesus does not give us all the answers that we wish we had when it comes to our own pain and suffering or those of others. Cameron's teaching that class that begins in a few weeks that I encourage all of you to consider. In wrestling with how do we reconcile a good, sovereign God with pain and suffering in this world? How do we reconcile those, both in our own minds and our hearts, but also how do we help others? Because like he said, that is one of the greatest roadblocks people have in coming to faith, is in wrestling with the evil and the suffering that do exist in this world. And while the death of Jesus doesn't give us all the answers we wish we had, it does give us a few. One of the things that it tells us is that Jesus cares about your suffering. Jesus cares about you and your suffering and your pain. Listen, sometimes it's easy for us to think, you know, others have it so much worse than I do. I've got no reason to be worried. And there's a lot of people in this world who are going through a lot of pain and suffering far worse than me. So why would God be concerned about my suffering and pain when others have it so much worse? But there is no limit to God's compassion. If Jesus, in the face of his own pain and suffering, which was far more than just physical, I mean, he was carrying the weight of the sin of the world at that moment. If even in that pain and suffering, he could be concerned about the suffering of his mom, he could be concerned about the guilt of the soldiers, he could be concerned about the hopelessness of the criminal next to him, if in the midst of his own pain and suffering, which was far worse, he could still care for others, then that means even if your suffering and pain isn't as bad as someone else's, God still cares about you and your suffering. Here's another thing that it tells us. It tells us that you and I should care about pain and suffering. It tells us that we should be concerned for others. It means that if in Jesus and the fact that his suffering was worse than everyone else's, that he still extended concern and compassion and care for others, that means that for you and I, when we're in pain, when we're in suffering, it is not an excuse to ignore others. It doesn't give us the right to just ignore the suffering of others, that even when we are suffering, we are still called to be concerned about others and to reach out with care and compassion. And here again, I know that the death of Jesus doesn't give us all the answers. But the cross of Jesus does give us half the answer. The cross of Jesus doesn't tell us exactly why you suffer. It doesn't tell you why your loved one got cancer. It doesn't tell you why there's pain and evil in this world. But here's what it does do. It does tell you what the reason isn't. And the reason isn't because God doesn't care. And the reason isn't because God doesn't love you. Because if he didn't care, if he didn't love, then he wouldn't become one of us to suffer. And so the cross of Jesus doesn't answer every question we would like to know the answer to, but it does tell us what the reason isn't. And it's not because God doesn't love you or care about you. Here's where the cross of Jesus gives us hope in the face of pain and suffering. One is because our God is sovereign. Through it all, he was in control. Jesus told his family and his followers long before it happened, when I go to Jerusalem, I'm going to be handed over to the rulers. They are going to beat me. They are going to crucify me. But in 3 days, I'll be back. Jesus told a crowd of thousands of people who had come to watch him and listen to him. He said, "No one takes my life. I will lay it down of my own accord. It will be my decision to do it." When he was standing in a trial before Pilate the governor, Pilate looked at Jesus and said, "Don't you know I have the power to kill you and I have the power to set you free?" And Jesus looked him in the eyes and said, "You don't have any power that wasn't given to you from above." Through it all, Jesus and his Father in heaven were not helpless. Through it all, God is sovereign. But in combination with that, God is also suffering. Jesus suffered for you. Jesus knows what physical pain is like. Jesus knows what spiritual suffering is like. Jesus understands mental and emotional abuse and torture. Our God is both sovereign and he is suffering, which means ultimately he is sympathetic because he knows, because he understands. I'm going to read a passage out of Hebrews chapter 4 for you. But I want to do it as we prepare our hearts to respond to who God is. As we prepare to respond to the ways in which he's speaking to our hearts. So if you'll close your eyes with me, I want to read for you Hebrews chapter 4. Starting in verse 14. "Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." Lord Jesus, I thank you. As we stand before you, as we sit before you today, that in the midst of our pain and suffering, even when it feels like things are out of control, we know you are always in control. That even in the midst of pain and suffering, you are sovereign. Jesus, we are so thankful and so humbled that not only are you sovereign, but you are suffering. That you suffered for us. That you cared enough about us to enter into this world of pain and suffering and evil because of your love for us. And God, we thank you that through it all, you're sympathetic. That you care for us, that you care for our pain and suffering, even if it's not as bad as others. It's certainly not as bad as what you endured, but through it all, you still care. So Lord, would you comfort us in this moment? Would you challenge us in this moment as we come before you to declare that you are God, that you are good, And in this moment, we give you our lives and our hearts.